The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Taking Stock on Friday. It's a Friday, everyone. The reason I did a big welcome at the start there, John, is because whenever I look back at these videos, there's always a big gap at the start. So there's a bit of a delay.
I thought you turned into a
game show host.
South American football commentator.
Yeah. Goal! I wonder if they have a training school for that. Just guys sitting there, practicing on the goal technique. Anyway, it's a Friday. It's the end of week, eventful week, of course. And by all means, subscribe. If you're just discovering this, please share it. We want to create a community where you can chat about stocks, specifically, small, micro, and nano cap, because they are the exciting stocks, not the big, boring old dividend payers. We don't want to chat about those rubbish ones. Everyone covers that nonsense, and it's boring, frankly. Boring. So we want to chat about Investomatic. Happy Friday. By all means, hit comments there. And so subscribe to this. Our subscriber numbers are going up nicely. So there's obviously a bit of a market for this. This time next year, John, we'll have millions watching. You watch. And the early people who do it, it's like early investors who took part. I was there on the first show there. So the topic of the day, I thought we'd do this, Don. I know it's an oldie, we sort of covered it a little bit. But I think why it's good to cover today is because the Bank of England have raised interest rates yesterday, and house builders didn't really do anything, didn't really drop anything, and in fact, if you look at it, we put a survey out there on Twitter. Please go to Vox Markets on Twitter and vote on that. But is now a good time to start investing in the house builders? So we've had interest rates go up, the bond yields, let me just show the chart, the bond yields. Get the right chart of there, but they have also pretty much come down by the looks of it. Or are they going back up today? Let's check. I'll share the screen here. And the house builders haven't really moved. So you're thinking, hang on a sec, the markets are seeing this. So this is a 2-year bond. Now, it's an inverse relationship between, of course, the price and the yield. So if the yield goes up, the price is going down in bonds. And bond prices go up, yields come down. So so the yields coming down, and that reflects, of course, mortgage rates. And if you're going for a mortgage now, it's a blend of like the next couple of years of what they think interest rates will be. And those have also come down a bit. I think it's from 5.8 maybe for a 2 or 5 year to 5.625. So they're coming down. So is it a good time now to invest in the house builders? What do you reckon, John?
Yeah, we talked about this the other day. I mean,
it's sort of a tailor-made
they're here. Pretty cheap. I mean, I've got a I use SharePad for all my data, and I've got the sector.
Popping your RNSs here. And stuff, yeah?
Yeah, RNSs, for everything.
Vox for that.
Vox for what? RNSs, but I use this for all the sort of fundamental data.
Oh, yeah.
For stock screening, that kind of stuff. Looking at some of the metrics on this sector, it is cheap. So you look at price to book, which is the usual way you'd value a house builder, price to net assets. And, a lot of them are trading below the value of their net assets.
Yeah.
And I think that reflects some nervousness that, perhaps there are still, there is still some pressure perhaps on the valuation of land that they have. But, some of them are looking incredibly cheap. The cheapest in the sector is Crest Nicholson, 60% of book value. But then you've got, Barratt, Bellway, 80% net value. You've only got a couple trading above book, and that's Persimmon and Berkeley Group. Berkeley's very focused on the London market, and similarly on a PE basis, they are mostly trading at single digit PEs or just above that. Dividend yields, big fat yields on them still, and we saw from Taylor Wimpey the other day they committed to paying that, and still very cashed up. So there is an argument that they're very cheap.
Yeah, I had someone ask me the other day, is there a fund? And I couldn't find a fund for house builders in the UK. There's a BlackRock ETF property fund, which is a bit different. I said I'd prefer to go for individual, good quality builder. But I don't like this chart, though. Does somebody say that? Yesterday, look, the interest rate went up, and house builders went up by, Taylor Wimpey went up by 1.36%. So it didn't fall off a cliff. So you got to say, is it priced in? I think over a longer term period, if you're scaling in on a monthly sort of small regular investments, I think you do very well. Pick it up a dividend, get a good average price. I think that's the way forward.
I think if you have a very long term view and a stomach for a bit more upheaval, then it's not a bad place to park a A little bit of cash, or as you say, scale in. But go back to that chart. You know, you had a bit of a false dawn once before here.
Yeah.
You know, so if you look back to October, when the sort of broad market rally began in October, you know, you did see house builders start to perform a little better. And you know, you look back over, you know, sort of 10 months, you know, they've performed very well. And you would have got a return from house builders. It's been a bit more tricky over the past 3 months, just on a sheer value basis, you know, they look cheap. But you know, of course, you have to be aware of the prospect of them being value traps, and you have to be aware that, you know, the economic backdrop, the central banking backdrop, is all very fluid, and you know, it's easy to be caught out. You know,
yeah. Have you seen that? Some would say that. I mean, I don't really go for patterns. I look at levels, because I think if you break above a certain level, people are paying more for that stock than they did previously, and that's a good indicator of net demand for the stock. But what's going on here? Looking like a bit of a Head and Shoulders, obviously a bit of an awkward looking bloke or woman, Head and Shoulders, but three shoulders and one head. But I'm not convinced by that. Yeah, I think there'll be a bit more consolidation there for a while. Anyway, let's go for some comments here. All right, so some comments here from yesterday. Rob from Norwich says, really enjoying these. Good to find out where John is. Always respected his quality company approach. Be good if these were podcasts too. What about my quality approach?
You're Mr. Rampy, aren't you?
I have not. In fact, you've talked about ADF facilities more than hey, today I'm going to talk about one of my stocks.
I know which one that is.
Good to find out where John is.
I've been around.
I've always respected his good quality company approach. It's a good sensible thing from Rob there and John. Hang on. Where do you live?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Suffolk.
Oh.
I disappeared out into the country.
He's not a neighbour of yours, is he? Rob Norwich, UK.
Yeah, well, not too far.
He's your brother or something.
I do occasionally venture into Norwich.
Yeah, Sam says, can you please make these available on podcasts? They are now. We'll be doing that. There was 1 year yesterday. And Gregory says, with lots of nuclear, maybe RR mini plants, reactors being built, where do you see the uranium price going? I keep looking at the Geiger counter, the low price at the moment. It's an investment trust. Listen, people have been talking about the uranium price for years. And when it goes, it really goes.
It's going. But it's going.
Does it really go? It's that you've got to wait for like 50 years before it starts to move. And then there's this rumor that really takes off. Have not bought any yet, says Gregory, but could be tempted. So
I had a very quick peek at Geiger. We spoke about uranium not that long ago. There's your uranium price. I mean, look at the long-term price is odd. What we had, if you look at the bottom in this period, we had a major nuclear catastrophe in Japan, Fukushima. And that really, you know, caused a lot of a concern that you know, this was potentially a problem that would see lots of countries retreat from nuclear power. We did see that in Germany. They've basically, you know, shut their nuclear fleet down, as did Japan. But Japan's sort of reinvestigating or, you know, restarting nuclear. It's still, you know, a very important source of power in the future energy mix, and you know, certainly in some of the developing world, they're building power stations at a lick. That uranium price, I mean, there's a couple of ways you can play it.
There's Geiger counter, I think that's it there. Geiger counter, GCL is the ticker there.
Yeah,
well, that chart there, right? You can see there at the bottom, it's bottomed pretty much. You know, it's 1, 2, 3, 4 times it hasn't gone below that 34 level, and it's if you look at this level here, previous support is resistance now, so resistance 40 pence. I'd say if it makes a market move, in fact, previous it spiked out there at 41, but if it gets above 41, 42, it may be going on a bit of a tear. It may be powered by uranium.
Geiger counter is, so there's a couple of different ways you can play this, but Geiger counter is an investment trust, and it invests in uranium explorers and miners. And the vast majority of them, as you pointed out the other day, are in Canada. So you've got about 73% of his portfolio is in Canadian uranium miners. The biggest of which I think is Cameco, but I might be wrong. There's another called NexGen Energy. I'm not sure if that's Canadian. It might well be. So what the thing about investment trusts, as I've mentioned before, is that when you get risk off sentiment, investment trusts tend to slip quite far below the value of their assets. So the share price falls below the value of the assets. And at the moment, Geiger Counts is trading a near 19% discount to the value of its assets. And its assets are obviously the aggregated share prices of the miners that it invests in. Yeah. So, you know, you could argue there's a huge margin of safety there if you want to invest in uranium via miners. And of course, as we also talked about, these miners in this portfolio are largely in very, very safe jurisdictions. The only one I can see that you might think is a little bit wobbly is Kazakhstan. I've only got about 3.8% of their portfolio in it. So it's interesting.
I was a bit tempted by that. I mean, I must tell you, about 5 years back, I think there was a group of guys on Twitter saying uranium's going to go any minute now, any minute now. But honestly, it is like you can wait for 20 years. So it's someone just sitting there. You want to see some kind of movement in the chart first before you jump in, because you can sit there forever, you know, if you just start
the
move, you know.
Well, the other chart to look at is Yellowcake. Okay. So if you quickly bring that up, you know, what we've seen there is, as you say, that, you know, the fact that we've had this subdued uranium price for a long time because of these concerns over the demand for uranium because of the demand generally, or the discomfort with nuclear power in certain countries. But that's starting to shift.
Oh, that's a cracking joke.
There you go.
So that's a nice uptrend there.
So Yellowcake is a slightly different way to play uranium. And essentially what they're doing is they're not investing in production or exploration. They're investing in the commodity itself.
Okay.
So they just buy uranium and store it. And so as the price of uranium goes up and they acquire more uranium, the value of Yellowcake increases. So that, you know, that's been on an absolute tear. It's, you know, more than doubled. In fact, almost trebled since 2020.
Yeah, it's hit a real range here now, so you need to get above that. It's spiked out. If you see the top of that sort of trend, spiked already out, and then came all the way back down, and then now it's trying to get more 4.5, so it needs to break out again. But it may have to consolidate.
So then going back to that, to our viewers' question again, the catalyst for further upside of
Gregory, for
further upside in the uranium price is that actually there could be sort of geopolitical situations that limit the sort of broad supply of uranium. We saw, as I mentioned the other day, Niger, there's been a coup and they've sort of threatened or have, I can't remember which, to stop supplying uranium to France, which is a big nuclear power energy user, and the US. But the other thing you've got is this thing that Rolls-Royce is doing, which is these small modular reactors. And these are not out of the lab yet, certainly in the UK and at Rolls-Royce. But I did a bit of digging, and there's kind of a lot of people exploring modular reactors around the world. There are four modular reactors that are in construction at the moment in Argentina, China, and Russia. You know, these things are, you know, a lot cheaper to build than a big nuke. So, you know, Hinkley Point, sort of 20, 30 billion and rising. These things cost about 2 billion each or less. So you build one for a city and, you know, there's your power. Lots of companies developing this alongside Rolls-Royce. But you know, if this takes off as an energy source, and it does feel like it has an important part to play in the grid, and we're talking, you know, technology that's not a million miles away, then you know, that could really, really boost demand for uranium. So I think it's an interesting little subsector and one well worth keeping an eye on. And you've got different ways of playing it.
Be careful if you're digging around uranium, John.
I'm always careful when I'm digging around uranium.
Put your hazmat suit on. So front page of Vox here. Ilika, of course, they sounded a game-changing. The thing is, you see a lot of game-changing.
Who is this?
Certic Medical.
This is what we spoke about when we mentioned Ilika yesterday. You know, and they must have been listening, because I said I want to see some progress with you know, this commercial manufacturing deal in the US, and then of course I want to see how that translates into further contracts. So this is now signed, sealed, and delivered. So this will sort of all start happening over the next 6 months of the year. You know, the technology transfer, getting the plant there up and running, I think this is what we want to see here. It's almost as though they were listening yesterday. There's a really interesting line in here. If you go just above Graham Purdy's quote.
Yeah.
So this hasn't really changed the sort of revenue outlook right now, but there's that two words in there for now. And I think that's really quite interesting because, you know, it could really change the commercial profile, the revenue generating capabilities of this business with these miniaturized batteries.
If I was them there, but the thing is, yeah, for now, first of all, that's a little bit disappointing. And then we'll progress in January. What it seems like years off. I know it's not far off, but it just say soon.
It's six months to get that tech and manufacturing plant, you know, set up and certified over in the US, and then we'll start to see some results. And you can imagine that, you know, now this is a done deal. Cirtec will be out, you know, marketing this themselves. They have within the agreement the right to go out and market these batteries.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen. I'm gonna take over here on a bit of content, right? This is Ilika's chart. It did look at that again. It's trying to break up there.
It's breaking up. Back down. It's trying.
But it may come back down. Okay, so I do hold the stock. So transparency. And I've got to say, it's a bit frustrating today because it's amazing figures that come out here. All right? I'll just go through that. They've expanded like no. I mean, they say there's a cost of living crisis going on, not in their demographic. Okay, escape rooms and social gaming and boom battle bars. I've been to quite a few of them, and they're always full, especially weekends. You've got to book in advance for anything. Always full, and I just think they've gone from literally seven, I think, sites. Come back last year, now they're 27 boom battle bars. And in fact, look at this. I'll share the screen with you. So where they're at, they've gone from... anyway, let's look at the figures, right? Group turnover, up 131%, 18.8 million. This is for the half year, mind. They're only 30 million market cap. They're looking at about 43 million for the full year. This is profitable as well. And we're talking about a 5x EBITDA at this growth rate. It's just nuts. They've got cash, the cash generative. And sooner or later, it will take off. I mean, you've got some stale bulls in here because it's done very well. I've held these for a while now, and I did buy them. I bought them down here. This is where I bought them. Now, back in October 2020, it's 7p pretty much. They were up here. I offloaded a few, but I still hold a nice little chunk of them. And it needs a breakout above this 21p. It will sooner or later. What you're seeing now, typical churn in the markets. Good volumes comes in, get some stale bulls, so selling up, bringing the share price down. Once they're clear, I think this will go higher. And I think what's going to happen here is they'll probably be taken out by a leisure company looking for growth in a new exciting area. It's one of those big, old legacy leisure companies who are looking for growth somewhere. But of course, you've got to establish this. They've had an amazing opening rate over the last year. So,
The one thing I would ask about this figure is I would like to see like for like. So, what?
Let me go back up. So,
double digit like for like.
Yeah, double-digit like-for-like growth sales live across both owner-operated brands.
Yeah,
Boom
yeah.
up 19%, Escape Hum up 20%.
Yeah, so they're the figures that are really interesting. That's a true rate of growth, you know, that takes takes the openings out of it and takes any sort of acquisitions out of it. But that's still growing at a lick. And, you know, I agree with you. I do like the...
And not only that, going forward, record bookings from corporate as well, which is very nice. And and they've confirmed that sort of 43 million figure and almost 5 million EBITDA is pretty much on track for that.
I think it's quite interesting that, you know, the leisure sector has had a really tough time.
Yeah, that's it. This has been lumped in with the leisure sector, right? Now, listen, there are lots of places out there at the moment that get knocked. I mean, restaurants, cinemas, don't lump this with that. This is new leisure, pretty much. This is what people are going to play and do, honestly, and it's not that expensive to do. Now, you compare, and they are, sentiment-wise, they are lumped in with that. Find any other company growing like that. It's ridiculous.
So I was going to say, I think when people go out now, they expect a bit more than, you know, sitting in a pub and drinking 6 pints. So I do think the experiential 10 pints. I was trying to keep a lid on that one. You know, I think experiential leisure is more likely to be, you know, it's more resilient than sort of standard, you know, pubs and restaurants. You know, if you look at the cinema sector, you've got Everyman, which is a slightly different approach. It's, you know, going to the standard, you know, multiplex. And they've done quite well, you know, because because it's a nicer experience. You know, Hollywood Bowl, you know, you've got
a good company, but again,
Ten Entertainment. And so I think the experiential leisure sector, you know, is better positioned to recover. You know, if people are sort of trying to save their pennies and have a, you know, a really nice night out with the family, or offices want to spend a bit of money, you know, getting the staff together, these are in a much better position to do it now. You know, it's just a changing culture.
You know, 4%. Come on! Why don't you deserve more than that? What do you want? They're giving you a golden horse here. It's unbelievable.
I must admit,
it's now profitable. They literally talk about managing scale. Richard and the team are going to be amazing. And if you check this out, the scale, they've literally gone from literally, you know, a single amount of bars to now, what is it? Here we go. Look at this. The group comprises now, and this is within you know, a couple of years, 27 Boom Battle Bar sites, 13 owned, 14 franchised, 46 Escape Hunt sites, 23 owned, 23 franchised, and they continue to expand. And
they've done it seamlessly.
I mean, this is a brilliantly run business in a very hot sector. It's new, and honestly, I don't know what the problem. I mean, if it can't rally on that, it's just, sooner or later it will rally. It was one of those things, a rally on a day where you don't expect the rally. But I think now what you're getting, we are in a sort of volume event situation where there's a lot of volume going through. Some bulls are probably coming out. You need to get the sellers out. It will go. Sooner or later, it will go. And I've been in a situation where I've had good businesses and I've held them for a while. I've got a little bit bored with them and they've gone bananas. And I thought, I should have had a bit of patience there. The business was going in the right direction.
It's a nice company. Yeah. You know what? I think it's probably got some other good, you know, nice trends behind it as well. I mean, you know, being able to get, you know, sites, good sites, is probably a little bit easier now.
Well, no, that was the whole thing. Do you know what? COVID was a blessing for them. So I started buying this in COVID because they had literally more cash than their market cap at one point, pretty much, or close to. And then all these the premier retail outlets, the big ones, the expensive ones, they couldn't get into before COVID. All of a sudden, they had all these retail outlets handing in their notices saying we can't afford to keep going. And they came to Boom, you know, XP Factory now and said, We're giving you lots of incentives. They're like 13 millions worth of incentives to move into these prime real estate. So, and you saw recently that the high streets of the sogginess, the weather going down. But these, you know, good malls are not. They're still a good footfall, and they are in prime locations now across all, a lot of cities across the UK. And the one in Oxford Street, the one right in slap bang in the middle of Oxford Street. That's their flagship store. It's huge. Absolutely huge.
Oxford Street is hellish.
The footfall is good, though, you know?
They're going back to Norwich, they're actually in the really big shopping centre there, right at the entrance, right opposite Wagamama. No, you're right. They've been able to pick up good spaces. I like, you know, sign of a successful formula is they've obviously, you know, started a lot of these with franchises, but buying back those franchises is interesting, a good sign. It's what Walter Intelligence are doing over in the US with their franchisees.
Yeah, let's look at this. So most followers, XP, Canadian Overseas Patrol, Turn. There's a win with their Ondra's down for a change. In fact,
profit taking, surely.
Yeah, our friend who's Alistair, who often comments, he became notified as a TR1 the other day. He's about 3% in them. So that's why he's quite passionate about them. He holds about 800 grand of stock in them. That's why. He's doing well. Yeah, yeah.
He's done all right.
I got to point out, day after, I think, it was also a TR1 holder, 5%. It came out, it looked like he'd sold. He hadn't sold at all. It's basically, you know, shares have been issued for warrants. And so his percentage had changed, but his shares that he actually held didn't. So I think some people were shaken out, well, worried about that. So a big hole of selling. He didn't sell anything. But you're going to get, when you have a chart, you know, like that on Ondo, for example, you're going to get, you know, sometimes a bit scary when a share price, first of all, when you get your share price rising like that, you love it. Then you start to worry a bit, thinking, oh, people are going to take profit because it's risen so quickly, so fast. And so you've got to expect a bit of consolidation, maybe, you know, coming around a bit. But look at all the supports there. So it hasn't gone below that support, which is, you know, 35. So it's looking good. But yeah, it's powered away. Okay, so what else on the front page there? Argo blockchain. That's an example of having patience, all right? The time is gone. But I literally did videos on this on YouTube saying, I think this is going to go nuts. Bitcoin is going to take off. And I'll show you where... Sorry, ARB is the ticker. Right now, they expanded massively, took on debt at the wrong time. But this is pretty much where I held them, John. I tell you, I was literally around about... Wait, let's get that spike of the way. It's around about here, I think, 2020, something like that, or even before that. And I got bored because the Bitcoin price was rising and this was going nowhere. And they are a miner of Bitcoin. I said, okay. And at the time, it was quite a newish idea, you know, a listed Bitcoin miner. I thought, maybe it's not going to be reflected in the share price of this company because they're mining Bitcoin, but Bitcoin's shooting up. And this is not going anywhere. So I got out. Next thing you know, way, 3,000%. And literally, I could have bought a new house with the one I had in there.
Try not to think about it. Try not to think about it too much.
So anyway, this is now back down to those lows. But they are saying it's Bitcoin. What is the point? It's pointless. It's absolutely pointless. It's not a currency. It's too volatile. It would change. No one uses the currency. No one uses it to buy things. It's not a store of value. Because it's all over the place. What is the point in Bitcoin anymore? It's no point in it. Absolutely pointless. That was the high, all-time high in Bitcoin. I saw that lady the day, ARK Investor. What's her name? Kathy Woods. She
Kathy
had,
Woods,
she had like an average price on Bitcoin of in the next 2 years. It's like it was something like 100,000. That was the bear case scenario. 100,000. I thought, what? How is she saying that then?
But she still around? I didn't know anyone listened to her anymore.
So I went to look at how she got this on one of her PowerPoint presentations. Turns out it was quite complex, like a spreadsheet kind of thing, but she just magic figures out of the air where she thought penetration of Bitcoin would be amongst the population. I thought, anyone can make those figures up. And yet there are billions invested in that woman's funds. It's just making figures up out of thin air.
Yeah, strange old fund that. And then you can actually buy a reverse ARK ETF at one point. Yeah. I think you probably still can. And did very well during the sell-off.
By the way, things to look at. You look at WPP, which is, of course, is a read across the advertising sector, of course.
Yeah.
And we had Martin Sorrell's new sort of vehicle.
S4 Capital.
Taking a bit of a hammering the day. Now his old vehicle is coming out. What's happened with the figures of these.
Same thing. Yeah, you know, pullback spending, largely driven by the tech sector, which of course is exactly what S4C is focused on. Yeah, but basically just cyclical. To be fair to the company, there's not a lot you can do. If the economy is worsening, and our budgets get hit. And you could say the same for S4. Over the long term, will tech clients keep spending? Of course they will. Is WPP going anywhere? Of course it's not. It's just, this is a bit of a downside. Having said that, and I noticed a quote I was reading the FT, the chief exec was sort of saying, we're in a cyclical industry. But I look back and, not that long ago, they were sort of saying, we won't get caught up in the cyclical sell-off. Well, yeah, you can't defy the sort of the gravity of markets and economies. It's just a big company. I really like big companies anyway. Boring. I must admit, I actually find WP quite boring because, as you say, it's just the economy.
Yeah. So one of the most read today was Alien Metals. Alien Metals. it's a funny name, Alien Metals, isn't it? But you're going to laugh. You'd expect to see but in fact, it'd be quite good actually. Look at this. What they've done here is Alien Metals board and executive changes. They're shouting that at you in capitals.
Nice,
why is it in capitals? Now, with Alien Metals, I expect to see a lot of Martians taking over the board, but...
it's a nice ticker.
it has. But literally, they just wholesale sort of changed the board here. Non-exec. Why did they put the non-exec at the top and the finance director below and the non-exec there? And then towards the bottom, chief executive officer. If I was him coming in, I want top billing. I'm CEO, man. Get me up there. Mm. But the fact is, the fact they've changed the board has dropped by 14%. You don't want to see that, do you? It's like when a CEO steps down, the share price rises. They must feel gutted. They look back, I'm stepping down, look at the share price, it jumps by 10%. Think, yeah. Oh, that's not good. That's not
wholesale,
good.
Wholesale bull change, never something you really want to see. Having said that, you know, wholesale bull change for a company that's been arguably underperforming for a while might actually be the sort of spark they need to get things moving in the right direction. I don't follow the company.
Phil says he sold Capebox the other day. Nice profit. There we are. How long will XP Factory continue to dilute shareholders? They're not. When are they diluting shareholders? Will it be profitable? Yes, it will. Yes. It's an excellent company, Phil. Have a bit of patience, okay? Bit of patience there. That's what you need.
I'm
biased.
I was asked to look at a company via my personal Twitter. That was Belvoir.
Belvoir, I know Belvoir quite well.
I had a trading update yesterday. So I had a quick peek at that. And do you know what? I actually think this is a really nice business.
Yeah, it is. Well, do you know what? My wife deals with Belvoir because of a property and stuff. But yes, they're a property agency. They've got sort of both sides on there. We talked about these actually, didn't we, on the on our filter. What's it called?
Filters, stocks reading.
So you've got two sides, haven't they? So you've basically got the lettings, which is always recurring revenue, and then you've got sales, which is sort of managing as well. So yeah, but the chart there, look at that. What happened here? What happened there? Why did it sort of shoot up on the 28th of March?
Who knows? Haven't looked that far back. But just in terms of the numbers themselves, you know, it's got a very solid recurring revenue base. Through the lettings business, again, sort of franchisees always incentivized to work harder. Strong balance sheet, you know, it's cash generative, so you know, no debt on the balance sheet. You know, if we take it back to the house builders, perhaps the way into property right now is not via the house builders, by anyone building and selling houses, but the other side of the equation, the rental market. So nice little business, and they do have a financial services division as well.
That's right, so financial services. Wow, forget about that. It's nice, and that's growing up 11% there.
Which is interesting because of course the mortgage market's difficult, but that actually in difficult mortgage markets, more people turn to brokers because that's the way you can actually secure a mortgage.
You've also been asked on Twitter, look at Anexo. It's a bit of a tumble. I've interviewed them quite a few times, and they do sort of supply cars for people who smash their cars up or something like that to no fault of their own. Plus, they also do go through the legal route for them. But they've also just done a claim, I think, is this emissions scandal happened through Volkswagen. But I don't know why they've dropped down so quickly there.
They didn't get as much as was hoped for, my understanding there. So I think the actual final settlement was a bit less than they'd hoped for. It's an interesting company. I don't know if it's still a favourite, but it was a favourite of my old colleague Simon Thompson over at the ISC.
Well, I think someone on Twitter just highlighted that, saying they've been tipped in Investors Chronicle, saying they are cheap now. They're 71 million.
It's a 50% discount to book value, and it's less than a sort of around a 5% forecast PE. So I mean, on that basis, it's cheap as chips, and there is nothing really behind the numbers, which suggests there's any significant problems. It's expanding out of that market as well, so it's going into sort of social housing disrepair to pursue claims against landlords who are putting substandard properties into the social housing system. It's a funny one. I'd need to have more of a look at it. I don't understand why the shares are so cheap. The only thing I personally, anything that's legal related makes me very, very nervous. I don't understand it fully enough. And if I don't understand something fully enough, then I'll tend to avoid it.
Well, there we are. That's the opinion. And Rob says, good to find out where John is. Always respected his quality company approach.
I will have a dig around this because Simon Thompson knows his onions, and if he still thinks it's cheap, then it must be something in there.
Yeah, that's fallen quite quickly down the chart there. So quickly, just on the top sort of business stories, we're running over a little bit. Jeremy Hunt says Britain is stuck in a low growth trap. And he's warned that after the Bank of England raised rates. But he said that, he says not just the UK, but Europe, US, Canada, Japan, we're all in a low growth trap that we need to get out of.
Yeah.
But he says, he pledges, What you'll see from me in the autumn statement, this is him selling himself, isn't it? But I've got a solution, guys. What you'll see in the autumn statement coming up, it's a plan. He's got a wicked plan, a cunning plan.
Yeah, let's wait till autumn. That's what we should do. Wait till autumn to try and solve our national economic problems.
Yeah, don't worry, everyone. Jeremy's got a plan. Jeremy's got the plan for you that shows how we break out of this long growth trap and we make ourselves into one of the most entrepreneurial economies in the world. That's what we want, he says.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
I'm not convinced by that line. He literally has a little plan tucked in his little inside pocket there that will actually transform the UK out of this growth trap. Why aren't the other economies doing this? Have they not thought of what Jeremy's thinking? They probably have.
This is the great thing because, you know, politicians speak as though they're the only country in the world.
Yes. Don't worry, I've got a plan.
But you know, every sort of Western country, as he rightly points out, is suffering the same problems. And a lot of that is sort of related to demography as much as anything else, you know, at the aging population. He's got a plan, but guess what? So has every other country in the world.
Exactly. Everyone has a plan, fella. Most people have a plan, right? But most of the plans don't work. It's not that easy. It's not just a simple, this plan's going to get us out of all the problems.
But on a serious note, you know, the American government put out something called the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yes.
Huge support.
Massive. And the Europeans.
Huge support. And the Europeans followed suit. And a lot of this is related to sort of green energy policies. And everyone was waiting with bated breath for the UK's response, you know, a month ago, over the summer. And I honestly, if you wanted the definition of damp squib, that was it.
Yeah, wasn't it like, I mean, the Americans are like something like 500 billion or something like that. Europeans are pretty much, you know, within the ballpark. And Britain's got like $1 billion. It's like,
yeah,
what?
Honestly.
What are you
going
to do with that? Anyway, saying that leads on nicely, right? Another bit of news here. And I say this because I talked about with Paul Hill today about a company I own. This is not a big up from a company I own, but it's in the space. So I don't know if you saw this. This is huge. First turbines being installed at the world's biggest offshore wind farm in the North Sea.
Yes,
to install the first wind turbines. The world's largest offshore wind farm off the coast of northeast of England has begun as the government tries to shore up confidence in Britain's green economy. So that's part of the plan. But it says, once complete, the £9 billion Hound Dog of Bank wind farm will be more than double the size of the next largest offshore wind farm operating today. So that's amazing size, really, because the big one's out there already. This is double the size of the largest one out there. Capable of powering 6 million British homes. If you want exposure to that, I've got a little bit of it. It's worth looking at. We've covered a company called Techmar Group. Have a look at those. They supply all the protections for subsea cabling and all that stuff for all these kind of offshore wind farms. But I like the interim update. They went through a bit of a problem recently. There's a strategic review. Two big investors came on board who are very experienced in this area, gave them like an £18 million convertible loan note, and they're on the board now. And they are going to do 40 million, about 16 million market cap, 40 million of revenue, EBITDA break even, and their record order book. And 90% of that 40 million for this year is contracted already. So I quite like them. They've had their problems. That's why they're massively knocked.
There's another little company in this space, Windar Photonics. We looked at them the other day. I haven't really dug into them. There's a piece on
not as good as Techmar.
Not as good as Techmar.
Jeremy's plan is to invest in Techmar. He'll come out with his plan in autumn. So what I'm going to say is invest in Techmar Group. That'll be his plan.
Yeah. Windar Photonics, basically, another small cap involved in the sort of the maintenance, management and maintenance of this really important infrastructure. I know you don't like big companies, and I know you find it boring, but I like SSE. I've got my eye on that.
Well, that is SSE, yeah. But it's I got the big ones coming in funds. Find. And finally, Wilco has warned us on the brink of collapse, 12,000 jobs. And I think, well, so what? I mean, when's the last time you went? I mean, it's sad for the jobs. But the thing is, there's a lot of competition out in the area. And when's the last time you went to Wilco?
I actually went to Wilco in Norwich.
Wow. You live a showbiz life, John.
It was to buy my daughters all of their university kit. Because it is ludicrously cheap, or was
But there's lots of places like that. I mean, Aldi and Lidl do all that stuff as well. And Home Bargains, my wife likes. And B&M, there's loads of them.
Yeah, busy space.
I last time I went to Wilko, it was like 10, 12 years ago, I think. So in that area, it's very cutthroat, isn't it? The margins are thin. You've got to be on your ball there. Yeah. And but John in Norwich going into Wilko, see, he does live the showbiz life. That's what money gives you. If you do well, guys, and invest as well as John, you could live his lifestyle. Okay.
But hanging around outside Escape Hunt in
Norwich,
looking through the window.
Yeah. Okay. Speak next week. Have a nice weekend, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
See you later.
Subscribe.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.